Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, I'm Scott Soschner.
And I'm Evan Novi Williams, and this is the Hoosier City Road Trip Sports Business Podcast, The Sportacast.
Yes, coming from Indiana, Indianapolis, you there, me here. I love that we can be in the same city doing, but it's still better for us to be in different places.
Like waving at you, out the window here, Scott. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you did when we both arrived. You're like, well, where are you? I tell you what hotel I'm at. I can see you. You're like, I'm a mile away. I'm waving. And I couldn't see. But I took my pictures arriving. There's an Indy car in the airport. There's the big banner, you know, the big race, you know, the race is here.
This city is decked out. It feels like a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like there's a pop-up Indy 500 shop at the airport.
People on my plane were all Indy 500 t-shirts.
The tallest building here is flying a checkered flag in addition to the American flag. There's the city is ready for this event. I think it's a bank building. I can't see it out my window here yet, but when I was further outside the city, I noticed it. Yeah, there's a big checkered flag on top.
Now, I have been here many, many times, Super Bowl. I have been here many times for Pacers and finals and things like that. I mean, we're going to do a special episode. We should say we're here because we're going to be doing a special episode of the Sportacast. When's it going to hit? Friday, Saturday? Do we know?
I think Friday is most likely, yeah.
All right. We're going to target Friday. Matt Whitehurst, you're going to have to make those digits go quickly to see if we can get that done. But, I mean, our guests, we're planning on, you know, things change. But we're planning on Elio Castro Neves, so huge name. I mean, still probably recognized in supermarkets for Dancing with the Stars. We have the president of the Indy Motor Speedway, Doug Bowles, and also Dan Towers, the CEO of Gainbridge, which is the title sponsor for the race. And I slipped, and I'll tell him I slipped. I was walking by, and I was like, oh, Conseco Fieldhouse. Oops. You know? So that's actually one of the questions I want to ask him, like, and if crypto.com is dealing with that with Staples, sort of, how do you and how long does it take to change the mindset of the fan? It's, you know, it's Gainbridge Fieldhouse, not Conseco. And how long does it take and how do you do it and how do you activate on this huge event? I mean, I got a ton of questions. I think it's going to be a really fun episode.
How long do you think your Syracuse friends will say Carrier Dome?
Forever.
Yeah. I think there's some that just
What is it?
We broke the story.
And I can't even remember what it
exactly
is.
Exactly.
At least it's Syracuse based, but yeah, that's one I think. Maybe you get one full generation, and by generation I mean 4 years of school, of students that were never there when it wasn't the Carrier Dome, or were there when it wasn't the Carrier Dome. So it's JMA, right?
JMA, so, Wireless Dome, I think, is the full answer.
Yeah, the freshmen of the JMA's first year, after they graduate, I think maybe people will. But I'll always call
scientific
it the
answer, yeah.
Yeah, interestingly enough, no air conditioning. Or didn't for a long time. Put it in. But
hope
didn't
there's
have
wireless.
Air conditioning.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would assume that there's wireless in there. And easy segue, because we're in Indy, and of course, Jim Irsay is the owner of the big football team here. The Colts, and at the recent NFL owners meetings, it was Jim Irsay who he's sort of become sort of front and center guy, right? Jim likes to say some stuff. Sometimes it's a little wacky, but Jim was talking about Roger Goodell's extension. He was talking about the Commanders. So, hey, take it away, indie guy. And what was your takeaway from what he had to say about Roger Goodell and his new deal?
Yeah, let's start with Roger. Been the commissioner since 2006 when Paul Tagliabue stepped down. 18 years, and it seems like everybody seems pretty happy with what he's doing, Scott. The news is he's nearing a three-year deal that will extend him through 2023. I think he'll be 68 years old, if I did the math right.
Well, it'll extend him through 2027.
Sorry, 2027, yes.
Extend through 2027, yeah.
So 2027, three-year deal. He'll be 68 by my math when that's up. He's had an incredible run from a business standpoint. I went to look this up. I don't want people to think I had this off the top of my head. In 2006, when he started, the average NFL team was valued at a little over $800 million. That's now $4.1 billion, Scott. That's essentially a 5X over his tenure. It's not the only thing owners care about, but it's one of the big ones. And his ability to be the face of the league. And in the past two decades, they've faced a lot of challenges, right? Colin Kaepernick was a real thing. The president of the United States, Donald Trump, was feuding publicly with the NFL. The concussion concerns are a real existential crisis to the sport of football. That there's so much that has gone on. Dan Snyder, you can argue, is another one, and we'll get to that shortly. There's so much kind of headwinds that have hit the NFL at various times during Roger Goodell's tenure, and he has showed a very deft touch at being able to be the public face of those things, which is the principal part of his job. So I'm not surprised, Scott, and I assume you're not either, that NFL owners, when faced with the idea of extending Roger for another couple years, seem to be kind of redlining or greenlighting that process right through.
All right, I have a lot of thoughts, and I was ready to go in on Roger and the NFL until you called head trauma an existential crisis in the NFL. You really believe that? You think fans
care? I think it's an existential crisis for the sport is what I said, which I think is a little different than the NFL.
What happens? Okay. But I'm like, what is the ramification? If fewer people play and they're younger, I just still think there'll be plenty of people playing in high school and college in places like Texas and Florida and Pennsylvania and New York. And I don't think there will ever be a dearth of people willing to play football and aspiring to play in college and then the NFL.
Well, yeah, we'll see. I think you hit on what my point was, which is that, yeah, a lot fewer people are going to be playing tackle, full pads, American football, I think, moving forward. And you're right. The NFL is very insulated from that. It's going to take a whole lot of people not playing for the NFL's product to go down. I do think people will still continue to watch it. But yes, I do think that the head trauma, and look, let's be honest, that we don't know everything about the science, right? There could be more science that comes out in the future that actually makes it clear that the sport is worse for you than we thought or better for you than we thought. So I don't want to pretend like I know the full answers. But yes, I think from a sporting standpoint, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that for American football, not the NFL, but for the sport, head trauma it can be an existential crisis.
You know what a tough situation is? When you're sitting in the car and you're driving with another father and the kid, and my focus group of one says out loud, "Oh, my father won't let me play football." You know, and then of course the other kid plays on the team, so he's playing football, and then you get into the, you know, "Well, Dad, why can't I play?" Even though we've done this a million times, and I don't want to say this father probably is just crazy for letting the kid play right now with everything that we do know at age 13. Of course, I encourage my kid to play hockey, so what do I know? Also the same. But it's a tough situation. I think you need to delay it a little bit. I've told him, you know, you don't need... He also says, "Dad, there aren't that many big collisions." Doesn't understand it's sort of the smaller collisions and the repetitive and, whatever. I just say, no, go play your whatever you want to do. And they probably beat each other up worse when they go play on the turf field every day. That I have no idea. And that's where he is right now. As we record, he just called me. Two things. Where are you? I'm at the field. Great. And then there's the question, "Dad, how much money is on my card? Can you put some more? We're all going to get food." So that's what I'm good for. But as for Roger Goodell, what he's good for, let's think about what the job requirements are and how Roger's done. By the way, Roger, remember, started as an intern. So talk about really working your, you know, this is like mailroom on up stuff, right? Ari Emanuel mailroom all the way up. His job, first and foremost, is to make money for the owners. He's done a just a fantastic job. You know, every single team cash flow positive. Every single team is appreciating in value. We're seeing $6 billion. Each time you went from like, what was it? What was the 1.4 Buffalo? And then we went, now two, we're like 2 point something with Tepper.
Yep. 4.6.
Okay, then you've got the Broncos and Rob Walton at 4+, and now you're at 6 with Josh, all without changing the rules. We'll see what happens beyond that. Okay, so that's a big check mark, yes. Be pretty much the flak jacket for the owners. You take the heat. Whenever something is unpopular, it's Rodgers' fault, right? No owner wants to take the blame. They want to point at Roger and say, go yell at him. He stands up there at the press conference every year at the Super Bowl. He takes the heat. He takes the tough questions, whether it's head trauma or whether it's sort of minority hiring practices. It's Rodgers' job to get up there and take the heat. Check. Okay, great. That seems like enough to get him an extension. But let me ask you this, Evan Novi Williams. Unlike the NBA, where there was a clear succession plan, where David Stern, years in advance, made it clear Adam is the new commissioner, and he was that sort of commissioner in waiting for, I don't remember exactly how long it was, but then he took over right as the Donald Sterling thing was going down, and he handled it deftly, and he cemented himself as the commissioner, probably because he was had these training wheels on for a while, right? What's going on in the NFL? If Roger Goodell quit today, you know as well as I do, so many people say to us, who's the next commissioner? Is it? And everybody can name a bunch of people that are maybes, yeah. But in-house, sure, you're going to look at Brian Rolapp and say, maybe it's Brian Rolapp. Is he the next commissioner? I don't know. Are they looking outside? I don't know. I don't think there is a succession plan. And knowing where the NFL is headed, what's the background of the person that would, what's the skill set? What's the background? What's the experience of the person who will replace Roger Goodell?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the NBA in that example you gave is the outlier here, right? Gary Bettman's been in the job in the NHL for a long time.
Yeah, Gary doesn't have public successor. Yeah, you're right.
Don Garber has been in this job for a long time in MLS. There's no public successor there. So I do think the NBA handled, obviously, I think that's an outlier. And I would argue in a way, and we can maybe debate this, I would argue that the NBA, just because of how much it changed under David Stern, that the job that Adam stepped into was so vastly different than the job that David stepped into. And you wanted obviously two very different people to handle those things. I gave those numbers about Roger's tenure, but I don't think the job in 2024, 2027, when Roger's done, is that materially different than it was in 2006, right? It was the dominant property in sports. It still is. It had the highest valuations. It still does. It's still trying to figure out a little bit about what the media landscape changes. But I think you still want the same kind of person.
I don't know if I agree there.
No?
I think the NFL, yes, but I think the NFL at its core now is a media company. And the same as the NBA. These are media companies, you know, and you've got to do, you need tech, you need a whole division of R&D. It is different. The game is the same and we're presenting it different ways. But the NFL is trying to, you know, cement itself around the globe. I think the job has changed as the media has changed. It's how do you maintain that advantage that you have? How do you get the networks or the streaming services? And I think we're seeing this with the JVs now with Redbird, on content creation and sort of studio. These teams, these leagues are tech and media companies first and foremost, and those are the folks that are going to need that kind of background to make it happen.
Roger Goodell, obviously, when he was hired, was a long time, an NFL lifer at that point. And one of the things about his job, and you touched on it, that I think gets kind of lost in a lot of the conversation about him, is just how hard and how good he seems to be at kind of balancing all of the internal drama. There are NFL owners
huge,
who hate each other.
Eben, huge point you just brought up. That is a huge point that he has managed to navigate those internal waters.
And it's really hard for an outsider to do that, right? I imagine when Roger was promoted, there were a lot of NFL owners who were very comfortable with Roger, had known him for a very long time, and kind of that eased that. I do agree the NFL, it's a media company, first and foremost now. It's a really hard job for an outsider, maybe even an impossible job for an outsider to step into. And that's going to be, I think, part of the challenge here. There have been a lot of NFL executives who have left the league in the past 5 years or so, but there is an internal benefit to hiring internally in that you already have those relationships, at least in part, in place, because that's the hardest part, in my opinion, is that you have owners who don't like each other. You have owners from very different industries, from different eras, who have very different feelings about what the league should and should not be doing, what's overstepping the league's bounds. And Rodgers obviously feuded with owners in the past, but he seems to have been able to really effectively keep the car on the tracks, so to speak. And I do think that's a big reason why he's paid whatever it is, $40, $50, $60 million a year and is about to get a 3-year extension.
All right. So who would have been? Do you see, like, you know, Eric Grubman? Do you see Anthony Noto? Like, those are examples of folks who have left the NFL. And we've talked about leagues looking to change compensation structure for executives because they just can't get, you know, long-term incentive plans or equity like you can get from companies. So it's hard to keep these folks. I'm sure the commissioner, you make 40, 50, 60. When it's all said and done, look 3 years down the line. Back of napkin math, you want to give me a note. I don't think you've done it yet, but you want to give me numbers to what Roger Goodell has collected in terms of salary? Can you guess?
Ooh, that's a great question. So he's been in the job for 18 years, right? I mean, I would think he started obviously lower than he is right now, but $10 million a year would be 180. I assume he's higher than that on average. Let's say 275.
See, I love this. This strikes me as like an Amazon question at a job interview. They just want to see the thought process, right? I think I read somewhere where Amazon asks you, how many window panes are there in Seattle? And then they just want, they know you don't have the answer, but they want to see the thought process. So whoever's going to interview for like the commissioner job, either with Roger or some owners, remember how many window panes are in Seattle. Think about how you would answer that. But I think it's going to be north of $750 million with a B dollars for Roger Goodell.
Oh, and I was way off. Okay.
Yeah, you're way off.
I was going to just let it go, but you're way off. 30-something million a year. Am I doing that math right? No, more. Way more than that. Yeah.
Yeah.
50 million a year.
A little more, but remember, there were years where it's 40, 50 plus and bonuses. Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't get a peek at it anymore. Remember, the NFL at the home office gave up its tax-exempt status so that we could not see what the highest paid executives make. And I mean, that's another discussion about private equity and sort of other disclosure and what the NFL doesn't like about private equity. That would go in a totally different way, but let's not do that. But we can talk about where the NFL is headed and private equity when we're talking about the Commanders. Still no deal, still some things to be ironed out. But this is like, to me, who's been following this quite a bit, the people reporting news that's no news. I don't think you would find a person alive inside the NFL who thinks that whatever speed bumps exist, I'm not even sure we'd call them a speed bump anymore. What's smaller than a bump? What's a speed pimple? There's a few speed pimples that are left. And they can pop it, they can put some oxy on it, they can dry it out, whatever you want. But by no means is the speed pimple going to derail Josh Harris becoming the owner of the Washington Commanders.
I think that's right, and not that it would be different in a different scenario, but the motivation that everybody in the NFL has about getting the old guy out does seem like it is really working in the Harris group's favor. You're right. There's so much noise about this Brian Davis's lawsuit, which got a lot of attention right now. I'm sure is not a factor thinking at all in NFL circles.
Nope.
Josh and his group are extremely well capitalized, or at least have a lot of net worth. I know the capital structure is part of the issue of what's been maybe a little bit of a holdup, but I think you're right. The desire to get people out, the ability of Josh and Mitch Rales and everybody else there to have money and get money if they need more structure, the fact that they're so close. We've talked about Josh Harris on this podcast before. He's been a runner-up bidder for a lot of teams, including the Mets and the Broncos. I think all those things are coming together to be exactly what you said. This deal may be taking a little bit longer to approve than what it originally seemed like. There may be some changes that need to be made, but I would be shocked, like you are, if this deal does not happen with this group buying the team.
There we go. Well, you know, having a talk about structure and struggles, how about Learfield? You didn't know I was going there, number two, but how about Learfield? Great. And I don't uppercase capitalize great all too often, but a great story by Emily Caron talking about Learfield's debt coming due and sort of the process that they're going through And not surprised, unlike Under Armour, when they were looking to renegotiate some of their higher cost deals with schools, Learfield seems to be doing the same exact thing.
Yeah, and we can give people a little bit of background on Learfield. It is the dominant, they call them multimedia rights company in college parlance, but essentially Learfield is a middleman commercial rights negotiator for essentially the dominant force in that industry across college sports. So negotiating anything from TV, local media, radio rights, all the way through sponsorship and naming rights and signage and things like that. And it works with the vast majority of all the biggest and a lot of the smallest colleges in the country. And it is the current iteration is a product of a merger of the two biggest ones, to just to give you a sense of the scale that Learfield has at this point. And you're right. Emily just did a great story. $1.1 billion of debt, which is due this year. Some of those payments are due at the end of this month, I think they start, and then a few more over the summer. There've been a lot written about Learfield's capacity to pay that debt down. S&P, I believe, said earlier this year that it did not expect the company was going to be able to. Colga Hagen, the CEO, told Emily that there was a restructuring plan. Those talks are going on, and there could be news at some point in the next few weeks. My guess would be that would look something like some of the debt holders become equity holders. But the COVID obviously had a huge effect on the company's business. Yeah, it's slightly in a different way, right? The COVID pandemic really upended a lot of these commercial deals. And the other kind of interesting wrinkle here to me is that the way Learfield and IMG before it merged, the way this group used to sign contracts, and I'm talking 10, 15 years ago, was big rights fee payments to the schools upfront. Give you a check,
then they went out and sold.
We monetize. And the future of this business, I think, and Learfield is trying to get to that point, the future of this business is doing deals that are more revenue sharing. So instead of, Scott, me giving you a $10 million check every year and you not worrying about working with me to help sell this thing, instead finding some partnership where you and I work together with your rights to figure this out, where everybody's incentivized in the same way economically. And Learfield is transitioning to that. Some of the deals that were renegotiated in the pandemic, from what I understand, move towards that model. As Emily reported, they renegotiated, I think, 6 deals, including UCLA and FSU relatively recently. Those are deals, again, that were signed before the merger, before current leadership, in this kind of older model. But I think the story is fascinating. If they can restructure, if they can get out of the debt a little bit, it seems like there's a very, very easy road here for this to be a very profitable and or healthy company. But it's going to be fascinating to see what they do and what that looks like to get to that point over the next few months.
How comfortable am I as a school president or athletic director at another Learfield school that has not renegotiated? I am keeping a very close eye on how this turns out.
100%. I think you're wary about what Learfield may come to you and say. I would also argue that how comfortable are you in any role in college sports right now? I think very uncomfortable. There's so much changing in that world, from the way colleges make money, how much of that goes to players. The concerns of 5 years ago are not the concerns right now. There's conference realignment. There's so much happening in college sports right now. And you're right. I think if a lot of Learfield, and we've heard from some of these schools, a lot of the Learfield schools are very close watching what happens with this restructure, what it looks like moving forward, if their deal is up or when their deal is up. Are they going to want to try to open up the negotiations? Do they want to stay where they are? There's a lot going on here for, again, one of the most powerful, and I'm not exaggerating here, one of the more powerful companies in college sports nationwide.
Now, speaking of exaggeration, and I don't know if you meant to do this, and I didn't scold you in real time because you were on a bit of a roll. But did you mean to pronounce the word parlance? You said
you said
college parlance. I'm like, are you trying to say the parlance of? You did. God. You parlanced it.
I shouldn't use that word anywhere.
Well, no, I don't mind parlance in the parlance of, you know, sport, in the parlance of the locker room, in the parlance of, I have no problem, but I do have a problem if you're going to like guss it up and do parlance.
It's parlance?
Like, just anyway. Huh. It's parlance, in the parlance of something. Yeah.
Interesting.
And you parlanced it. So
not only did I use it, I pronounced it incorrectly. Yeah, that's brutal.
I just want to make sure if I... All right. EA Sports, it is in the game. And you know what game is back? College football. There was a big deal a while back when EA was like, well, we're not going to pay the players. And, you know, the judge had ruled, well, you can't use their name, image, and likeness then. So you can't have a college football game. I mean, you could have these sort of nameless, faceless, you could have the school uniforms, but you couldn't say the quarterback from this team. That was a no-no. Well, now, thanks to NIL, thanks to group license of one team, and I'm not debating the merit of whether this is a good deal or a bad deal. I know you think this is a great deal for EA, but if we're talking about, again, back of napkin, if we're talking about like the most any player, it doesn't matter if you're a backup at Troy or the star quarterback at Notre Dame or Alabama, we're talking $500. But it's in the game, and they're in the game, and now the game is back.
This is such an interesting one, right? Because when NIL happened, there was so much discussion about how do you compensate, who compensates Johnny Manziel relative to the third backup left tackle.
That was the example I love the most. Remember, Johnny was the guy everybody pointed to, but how much could Johnny Manziel make? I love that reference.
100%. And this is an example, as you said, of an NIL opportunity where it is totally agnostic, whether you are, from what we understand, whether you're the starting quarterback at Texas A&M or you're the third left guard at Texas A&M, everyone's opting into the same thing and getting the same pool. And it's not a lot of money, Scott. I think EA is setting aside about about $5 million. So divide that by 10,000 players if they opt in, and you're talking $500 a player. What I think is so interesting about this is that I think the way that EA did this really puts in stark relief how much athletes actually also get from being in this game. And I do think that they should be compensated for being in it. But in an alternate world where EA, and theoretically maybe they could have done this, it would have gotten some blowback. But if EA said, we're not going to compensate anybody, but if you sign this document, you can be in that video game. I think that thousands and thousands of college football players would sign to be in that game, right? So EA is very cognizant of the fact that players are getting something for being in the game. A marketing benefit. It's cool. You can play as yourself. They like that. There's a lot of benefit for athletes in being in this game beyond just the compensation that EA is giving. So $500, I think, looks small for some people, and it definitely will be for some, right? If Johnny Manziel, Caleb Williams, let's choose him, Heisman Trophy frontrunner, right? The ability to use his name and likeness in a massive video game for $500 is the steal of a lifetime, right? And it's probably overpaying for again, thousands of athletes as well. But I think the way EA is going about this and one team, which is doing it with them, I think they're doing it in a savvy way. And I'm fascinated to see how many people, does Caleb Williams understand that as much as he wants to be in this game, he's being severely undercompensated for it? Or does he say, I'm making money elsewhere. I want to be in the game. I think it's cool to play as myself as the quarterback, and I'm willing to take $500 just to do that. Yeah, I'm really interested to see what the opt-ins look like.
Like at the NBA level years ago, when they had the group license, some players would opt out, and therefore the league could not use their marks or whatever. I don't know. I think we're going to go there because there are just so many. There's a handful, and it's not a lot. It's the Manziels, the one, two every year that are worth so much more that we'll say, nope, can't do it. Can't use me, can't do it.
I remember that with the NFL PA, there were, when I used to play Madden, right? There were a few, I think LeVar Arrington was one of them, but there were always a few players that were number 99.
Did you play real Madden or lightweight Madden? Which did you play real or lightweight Madden?
That was good. I did not see that coming. It's funny when you were talking about football participation earlier, I was going to weigh in with my own experience, and I chose not to because I knew exactly
where
the conversation was going to go. But we came back to it anyway. There I always used to wonder, like, why is LeVar Arrington just number 99, right? And it was because he had opted out of whatever the group license was in the NFL for the Madden video game. So yeah, we're going to see, right? And if this goes well, I could see a world where this expands to the college basketball game, et cetera, if they want to do that at some point as well. So there's a whole lot of, and I'm sure other companies are looking at this as an experiment to see, does this model work, or do we need to be doing some kind of tiered thing to get the better athletes the bigger checks?
All right, let's do this on the macro level and on the personal level. Macro level looks like Facebook, for whoever ever thought of Facebook as sort of a live sport. You know, they had the baseball games, the exclusive baseball games. I think it was Mets Phillies. And do you know the reason that it was Mets Phillies was the first game that Facebook showed live? Do you know why?
Who is Mark Zuckerberg, Phillies fan? No, he grew up in D.C.
No, but you know who's a huge Mets fan? That was Rob Shaw. Our friend Rob Shaw is a huge Mets fan, and he said, if we're going to do this, let's kick it off with Mets and the rival Phillies. That's why it happened. Well, we learned today, Rob, part of sort of the reorganization of Meta, Facebook, however you want to call it, this whole sort of, I think, pullback from sports. There were three sports executives from Meta let go, and Rob among them. So personal level, you know, we used to work with Rob. I've done a lot with Rob. Great executive. Can't wait to see what he does next. Macro level, not really sure what's Meta do in sports. Not that, you know, we have Amazon, we have Google. There are streaming options for the NFL and the others and the NBA. We get it. But it just looked as if for a while that Facebook would be one of them or could be one of them. Not so much anymore.
Yeah, and this does not surprise me from a direction of Facebook kind of way. The Dan Reed and Peter Hutton, who played big roles on that team over the past few years, are also no longer in those specific positions. If you had asked 3 years ago, it probably did look like there was a chance that Facebook was going to be a big player in the live sports rights. They were early into doing stuff with MLB. They had some Champions League games as well. It looked like they were dipping their toe in. And then a couple years ago, it became very clear that the direction was live events are too expensive. It does not really fit in with the Facebook video strategy, in which case the kind of relationships that Facebook had shifted more towards the kind of highlight, video sharing, audience engagement, those kind of deals that Facebook does. So I'm not surprised. I think there is and we're seeing this across the Disney Plus numbers as another example. There's kind of a sobering, I think, kind of halo happening around digital and streaming right now, where a lot of people are rethinking their plans, maybe right-sizing their workforces and things like that. But yes, I agree with you. I think Facebook, they obviously looked at this world. They were a bidder on a whole lot more than just the baseball and the Champions League that I mentioned there. But it seems very clear, at least right now, that this is not a company that is going to rush into sports in the way that Amazon, for example, seems very willing to be doing.
All right, get ready to stretch. In the parlance of radio and podcasting, it is time for us to wrap.
We will do it then, live from Indianapolis. And folks, check out the new Sportercast, the special episode dropping later this week from the Indy 500. He is Scott Soschnick on Twitter at Soschnick. I am Eben Novi Williams on Twitter at Novi_Williams. The show is produced by Matt Whitehurst. Shout out to Matt. He does a great job. Sportico's digital media editor, Cora Veltman, would like you to know that this is the hub of the Sportico Media Network. And there's more episodes coming.